Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game. In this episode, your host Lewis Irons sits down with under-16s head coach Stuart McLaren and head of coach education Greg Patterson.
Stuart, Greg, thanks for joining me. First of all, Greg, I guess you're the man that probably is in the know and wants to give us a good bit of background as to Stuart and how good it is to have him round the table to take forward in the podcast.
I don't know if he's been in the know, but yeah, it's great to have Stuart here, having worked with Stuart in coach education before, and then now Stuart in his new role under 16s, and there's a lot of kind of collaborative work now between football development and performance, so it's good to have him.
Yeah, Stuart, you've fairly clocked up the emails in your career so far. Here you are in Hampden, and it's, I guess, the path you've taken. Do you want to give us a bit of background as to how you maybe first crossed paths with Greg?
I think probably the last part of my own formal coach education journey, if you like, was the UEFA Pro Licence course. Yeah. And my group, if you like, sort of coincided with Greg's appointment in here. I think he probably joined the association part of the way through that. So first crossed paths in that instance. And then, I was saying, when I was fortunate enough to come out of management, we're still in Albion, one of those mutual parting of the ways, or a mutual termination, mutual sacking, if you like. As I said, I was fortunate to be in a position here at the Scottish FA and obviously working in part alongside Greg with my first role as community development manager, and then kind of morphing into, I guess, working side by side as coach education and development manager. It was great. I've thoroughly enjoyed my time so far, and Greg's been a huge part of that.
Yeah, and to have that initial relationship through coach education and now obviously to be with under-16s, it's a good way to start for Stuart, isn't it, going into the youth teams like that after coach education?
I think so, and he's obviously taking to it like a duck to water, as I say. He's doing great things, and I hear a lot of good things through Malky and stuff like that he's doing with the squad. So no, absolutely, it's I think coach education is a great grounding for any coach, you know, and that you hope that people, you know, find their own pathway, if you like, through coach education. And Stuart, you know, Stuart's, even before he joined us, his previous work with, you know, the Federation over in Australia and things like that as well. So there's tons and tons of experience can be gained and garnered through involvement in coach education that will stand people in good stead for future roles.
Yeah, and speaking of that experience, Stuart, you obviously have a good wealth of experience that you can bring into it, and if you look back to sort of where your career's been, how much experience have you gained over the years?
Yeah, probably more than you recognise. It's not until you take the time sometimes to just reflect back, or even as I have done before coming into this, maybe taking a couple of notes down and realising where it all started. So I took to coaching probably being inspired by the fact that I had some good coaches in my own youth development period as a player. You know, my dad was a bit of an inspiration in that point. Had some good coaches with kind of representative teams as well. He doubled up as a club coach as well. As a guy called Gary Johnson, it was terrific. But I started coaching, you know, even when I was still playing, relatively young. You know, as you do, the club would host holiday camps and different things like that during the school holiday periods, and it was the players that were in charge of taking a group. So it was, you know, before you really knew anything about you know, sort of managing kids or how to teach them technique or how to make them decision makers, you were getting involved in that, and I just thoroughly enjoyed it. So, you know, if I take from that part, you know, jumping in every now and again and taking holiday clinics to now taking a national team, it has been a journey which has taken me across a lot of different groups, which I say has been terrific, and the fact that I've had that opportunity to learn in so many different environments. And also the different roles that I've had, both in Australia, working at Loughborough University as well, and now here in Scotland. It's the people that's brought me into contact with. You know, we spoke obviously about Greg, but, you know, the guys that have you know, contributed, probably some of them unknowingly, throughout my coaching journey, has just been terrific, and I've been very, very fortunate.
Yeah, and one of the things we've been speaking about in the podcast is things we can learn from the likes of the US, and now obviously we're talking about Australia. I guess when you look at where Stuart's been, that he kind of fits the bill perfectly for having bits that he's taken from different cultures.
It was absolutely fantastic. During his time in coach education, you know, you might spend 8 or 9 hours in an office together, but then I'm driving home and something Stuart might have said during the day from his time in Australia, then comes up, and you know, it springs something again in your mind and your memory, and then you're phoning them regardless of the fact you've just spent 8 or 9 hours in an office with them. So you're then phoning them and taking them back to that time and drawing back on those experiences. And then, of course, Stuart keeping in touch with people that are still working in Australia, and what are they doing? You know, I've spoken openly in that, I suppose, in this podcast and other places about trying to attain world class. Now, we're not sure what world class provision looks like for coach education, but certainly being able to benchmark and draw comparison to other associations, other federations around the world is one way to help that.
Yeah, I guess it's probably the easy thing for us to look at with regards to your career, Stuart, but when you pinpoint and narrow down what you did pick up in Australia, did it round you as an individual and as a coach?
It certainly did. I think, you know, one of the boys that was just totally obsessed with football, you know, I can trace it back to the 1982 World Cup, being 7 years old, and my dad telling me that the guys that was watching on TV got paid to play football. I thought, that's the thing for me. So, you know, but along the way, as I say, through the playing career, I was very fortunate to have some good experiences. I was a scholarship holder at the Australian Institute of Sport, sadly a programme that doesn't support football any longer. But if you look at that programme, you can trace back, you know, the kind of often used phrase of the golden generation, but the Viducas and the Craig Moores and the John Aloisis and people like that obviously carried the country through a couple of World Cups. And a lot of these guys were kind of colleagues of mine, but it was, you know, even deeper than the environment that we had there at the Australian Institute of Sport, which had, you know, stuff that was kind of world-leading, if you like, and world-class in terms of sports science. And I look back at the things we were doing in terms of psychology as well. You know, when you're talking early 90s, and groups even before me in the sort of late 80s, you know, this was the kind of commonplace. But the guy for me that was the core of it and still plays a leading role within youth development and coach development in Australia is a guy called Ron Smith. And again, if you go back through any of the prominent Australian players over the last period of time, they'll have had some sort of contact or some involvement. They'll speak very highly of Ron. And he was someone, as again, you know, as a 16, 17-year-old player, almost probably subconsciously inspired you to become interested in the game and to become interested in coaching as a profession, because I certainly looked up to him and still do now. In fact, it was one of my kind of fairly proudest moments, if you like, of the last couple of years. He had a lot to do with Tom Rogic's career early on in terms of him being spotted as a talent. You know, he was missed by a lot of clubs in Australia at the time. And Ron was over in the UK and made a point of coming up to Scotland to see Tom in the cup final, but he made a point of getting in contact, and we sat down at a bite to eat and a cup of coffee and just talked all things regarding coaching and football, and it was terrific because he's a great mind.
Yeah. So I guess, Greg, from a coaching, certainly coaching point of view, there probably are a lot of similarities between Scotland and Australia, and when you see the amount of players that have crossed over in recent years particularly as well.
I think there's similarities in every association or every it's the problems and issues that I sometimes like to kind of try and delve into and how we solve those problems. I remember one of Stuart's colleagues who's now actually doing the A licence, and as Stuart says, there's that kind of informal chat when you sit around with a cup of coffee. And I remember speaking with Stuart and Graham last year, and they spoke about or Graham spoke about how in Australia now they're now going online. Yeah. A lot of assessments are going online. I thought, well, maybe that's something we can look at. But then it sounds great in principle, but then when you start delving into it with Graham, then, you know, there's people not completing the course and different things like that because of the problems and the issues they're facing then with, you know, recording their sessions, uploading their sessions to a system and all these different nuances that you'll only learn about when you actually speak to the great minds that Stuart's alluded to. So yes, it's good to maybe look over the fence at time, but it's important to spend that time with others and really get into the nuts and bolts of how things are operating and working.
Yeah, it's an interesting point Greg makes about the differences and the similarities there. And I just want to go back obviously a bit in your career, Stuart. You mentioned earlier about Stirling Albion and obviously the mutual sacking or however you wanted to put it, but going through difficult periods like that as a manager can give you a lot to learn as well, can't it? Obviously it's not easy going through something like that, is it?
Not at all, but you know, it's the same with anything in life. I don't think there's anybody ever learned anything without making a mistake. And all the while, I look back over my kind of previous jobs, whether they be in sort of senior professional football with Stirling Albion, and previously with a club called the Brisbane Strikers in Australia, both as a coach and as a player manager, or whether they be within youth development programmes that I worked previously, as I said, at Loughborough University, and again, obviously in Australia with the Queensland Academy of Sport, both the men's and women's side. You know, you look back all the time at some of the things that you used to do, or some of the things you did do, decisions that you make, and it is all a learning experience, absolutely. You know, I still hope that all my best years are ahead of me because of, you know, the mistakes that I'll make, no doubt, in this job as well. You know, but the Stirling one was certainly an eye-opener, because I think it is, you know, such a unique environment where, you know, the culture's so deeply ingrained, and that was one of the things that I found difficult at times, I've got to admit, to sort of accept, but also, you know, perhaps didn't or wasn't able to kind of influence the type of change I would like to have within the club, and of course in a wider scale across the game. So there's loads of mistakes I made at Stirling, and ultimately the results, the number of points we collected in matches wasn't enough to keep either the supporters or the board, more importantly, satisfied. But as I say, you know, in terms of me thinking selfishly about it, it was a great period. You know, I was fortunate to have had that experience and to be able to call upon that now, you know, as part of who I am and how I go about my job today.
You touch on culture, which is another thing I want to bring up on, and that perhaps the culture, you talk about differences between Australia and Scotland, that's a big difference, I'm sure, as well, the culture, but having guys like Stuart, you know, Brian McLaughlin, that are working with these young kids, that can instill a culture early on, these guys are the right ones to be teaching them the way, aren't they?
I think so. Between Stuart, Brian, Scott, even Fraser as goalkeeping coach, all underneath Malkin, and, you know, Shelley and the two Paulines and the women's side of the game, I think, yeah, what they're doing on the performance side is great, and sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's lost, or sometimes it's not that well publicised, you know, the hours that do go into it, and, you know, that hard work that they are doing in order to move things forward and essentially move us forward as a nation. But yeah, that culture within probably Hampden is something people don't see, that culture that they try and breed, that Malky, I suppose, as a performance director, tries to breed down through all those guys that I've mentioned there, you know, them sitting together, we've spoke about it two or three times already, you know, that kind of sitting around, that boot room mentality of sitting in an office locked away for hours on end. Yes, there's cups of coffee, but it's that chat and that, you know, what they're doing, so that Stuart's not doing stuff in isolation as an under-16 manager. The under-17 managers is informed, and vice versa. I know, because Stuart was involved with coach education, and then, you know, he's rushing away from that coach education course. Why is he rushing away? He's rushing away to go and spend some time with Brian McLaughlin and his under-17 squad. So everything's intrinsically linked as well. There's nothing left. There's nothing left then to chance.
I think just on the culture point of view, you know, there's a lot of things. I say that, again, I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to work for 3.5 years at Loughborough University. And for those that are not aware of it, you know, maybe do a little bit of research and find out, because it's, you know, it produces an awful lot of talented athletes across a range of sports. I think there was something done a number of years ago that if Loughborough was taken as a country in its own right, it would finish something like, you know, in the top five of the medals in the Commonwealth Games. You know, it's a phenomenal sport institution. I think it's as close as we have in the UK to, you know, what we know about in the American colleges and university system in terms of elite sport and obviously academic research and things like that. So, you know, my time there, probably, you know, I learned an awful lot and stuff away from the purely football element, you know, so around coaching and around other areas. And culture was one of the things that everybody, I guess, probably has their own perception, or, you know, you probably sense what it means and what it feels like, but to kind of define it, you know, it's a hard thing. I think, you know, a quote that comes from a fairly prominent rugby coach was, culture precedes performance. You know, so you can't expect teams to go out and perform in whatever environment, whatever level you're looking at, if they don't have the right sort of culture. But what is a culture, and how do you create it? And again, one of the other you know, top people and someone that's had a strong influence on my career is Professor Chris Cushion. And Chris worked as an assistant coach with me, but in terms of the field of research and sports coaching, he's you know, one of the leading experts across the world. And Chris came up with, you know, a simple definition that I've kind of taken with me all the time, and culture is simply the unwritten rules that become accepted. And if you think about it, that's what it is. You know, obviously teams have codes of conduct and different rules, and they're obviously all important to try and make sure that there is organisation and there's some discipline. But ultimately, your culture is that. Yeah. Unwritten rules that become accepted, to become a way of working, you know, how we do things around here and everything else like that. So, and Greg's right, you know, there isn't a lot of really, really good work that's been done within the performance department and across the association in general. And particularly when we talk about that kind of collaboration between the performance department and Coach Ed, to try and create a culture around Scotland and Scottish coaches and Scotland national team players.
Yeah, so how have you found it, obviously, going from that environment into what you're doing now with under-16s? Obviously, you are instilling a culture into these boys, but you obviously have so much going on in this association to feed into. It must be very harmonious, and it needs to be, doesn't it, to work well?
It does, yeah, it does need to be harmonious. I think I'm in an envious position from a lot of coaches' perspective. Not only do you get the, I guess, the honour that comes with being a national team coach, but it's a real privileged environment because, you know, unlike perhaps some other places, whether that be other youth development programmes or even the club environment, when they come to represent the country, it's the highest honour. And essentially with the group that I work with, it's their first experience and the first opportunity to pull on a national team shirt, be that just in a training camp or when we go into play in UEFA development tournaments. So, you know, that you're coming with talented players, obviously, because they've been selected as the best 20 or the best 24 at that age that's eligible to play for Scotland at this moment in time. But they're also coming with a high level of motivation. So you can focus on what coaches love focusing on. That's trying to improve players in terms of their performance. But I'm trying to indoctrinate, is a word that we use with Malky quite a lot, into our way of working, into what our culture is going to be like. And there is a consistency to it, so that whenever... or those who are fortunate enough to go on and get the opportunity to play at the older age groups, and hopefully in years to come, those that go on and play for the A squad, you know, it won't be alien to them when they jump from one to the next. You know, it becomes a quite smooth transition because of that consistency of the way how we're working and the culture that we have.
Yeah. And Greg, when we think about the ultimate goal of this podcast and we think about people listening that have maybe an aim to go into coaching, they must listen to Stuart and they must think, well, you know, someone with that sort of wealth of experience is quite overwhelming. But ultimately, when you whittle it down, it's about having the right attitude and passion for the game and for teaching and showing the right way, isn't it?
I think it was a question we were asked, myself, Malky and Andy, in the first podcast, and you're right, it's if you were to look at probably Stuart's career, it's not luck, you know, it is hard work. I hate this thing, oh, I just get lucky, oh, you're so lucky to be under 16 manager now. You know, it's not luck, there's a lot of hard work, there's a lot of choices that Stuart's made, he's made a lot of sacrifice along the way as well, and there's a lot of, you know, there's just a lot of good choices along the way, and Stuart's been humble, and there is a lot of humility in him as well, and I always think that's one of the qualities that young coaches perhaps miss. It's that having that humility, and you know, he spoke about influences in his career as well. So it's all these different things that go into that melting pot that essentially, I was going to say essentially spit out an end product. There's no such thing as an end product. You know, even if you listen to the Pep Guardiolas and the, you know, Stevie Clark, and it's doing so well in Scotland just now, people like that are, you know, very well established in the game. They still talk about learning on a daily basis, learning, and you know, every single time they play a game, every single time they have training, etc., etc. You know, and Stuart, known Stuart, he's very much like that as well. He's already spoken about making mistakes, and he'll make more mistakes. You know, so as I say, it's that melting pot of all those different qualities, open-mindedness, growth mindset, everything like that goes into that kind of one recipe, if you like, but the recipe never ends either. It's always evolving.
We spoke about mistakes, and we know that every coach in every walk of life in football is going to make mistakes as they go along. Let's talk about the other side of that, and the moments where you sit back as a coach, Stuart, and you look and you feel like you've done something, you feel rewarded. But there have been some moments like that in this role in under-16s where you go, yeah, this is why I'm here.
There has been, yeah. They come at strange times. You know, it's not about winning games. We've had the satisfaction of have beaten Albania and beaten Malta in some recent development tournaments, and with a sort of a development sort of group, if you like. We played against an Australian schoolboy side and we beat them, but those aren't the moments at all. The common, as I say, in strange instances, you know, and it might be just a little glimpse of something in a training session. You know, it might be some feedback you get from some of the players when we have our individual meetings. You know, there are times just where it comes up, and it's recognising that, you know, it's only a small part. You know, we do only have the players for a relative amount of time, relatively short amount of time. But as I say, it's trying to open their eyes and increase their awareness of what it takes to become not only an international player at youth age groups and hopefully working towards A squad, obviously that's what it's all about, but for them having an awareness about the amount of work that it takes to have a decent career within football. You know, they've also been identified as having some talent. It doesn't always go hand in hand with potential. But when you see those moments of players taking information on board, you know, preparing, you know, making mistakes and the behaviour sort of changing, you know, and then how they react to those mistakes at times, those are the moments that they give you sort of real genuine satisfaction. You know, I had if we look at our kind of way of working here, there's a strong talent ID and scouting network being set up. And on the back of that, we had a couple of players recommended. And so I had to go and take the time to travel down to London and go and see them playing for their club side. And fortunately enough, one of them has ended up playing up an age group, so with Brian's under-17s in the elite round, and featured in the last game and put in an absolutely terrific performance. So it's that those little glimpses, those little moments every now and again that kind of give you that real satisfaction that, you know, the system is working, you're playing your part and you're making your contribution to that, and you're seeing players, you know, grow and develop through time. As I say, we only get them for a small period of time, but you try and have as much influence in that time. But hopefully, you increase their awareness so that when they're going back to their club and they're working week in, week out with their coaching staff and everything else there, you know, they've got that in the back of their mind about what it takes to become an international player.
I think a lot of the stuff Stuart's obviously talking about being a coach to players there, but I think you could probably change the words coach to tutor and player to coach in that instance, you know, because he talks about having that influence over the best influence you can have over the player as they go back to the club. Well, it seems true of tutoring, when Stuart's tutoring for us and on courses, you know, he'll try and have that best influence over the coach so that they then have that better or they're more aware of how to improve themselves when they come back at the club, and then of course they come back to coach education. And that whole process continues to evolve, and hopefully, you know, we're all here to try and make better players if we possibly can.
And just touching on that, what Greg said, I mean, I was a little bit fortunate. The more experience I've gained, the older I've become, and I'm starting to really show it and feel it at times as well. When you see, you know, guys that you've always imagined to be young players actually now retiring because they're 36, 37, but they're separate stories. But, you know, I was fortunate enough to have maybe some early success, if you want to quantify that, as a coach, and probably at the time not having a sort of mentality and coming up pretty much straight out of playing into coaching, thinking, you know, well, I've cracked this, I've got maybe a wee bit about what it takes. And it's only as you start to become more experienced, you start to recognise, you know, how much you don't really know and how much you do have to improve and how much you do have to learn. So I think that's one of the biggest skills, as Greg said, is to be able to actually have that appetite for learning. There's a little phrase we try and use with the players as well. It's that rage to master, you know, so have that real energy and enthusiasm to want to become better. And I think, you know, if we're able to try and enlighten some of the coaches that we work with during the licence courses in the same way that we do with the players as to what it takes, some of the questions they can ask themselves, some of the work that they can do when they go back to their own environments, be it with clubs or any other programmes, to try and help them get better. That's all we're trying to do.
Because you're going from dealing with coaches to under-16s, but ultimately you're dealing with people. You have to be the right type of person to be able to get the best out of these people, don't you?
The best way I can sum it up, and it sounds as if I'm constantly trying to promote previous editions of this podcast, which I maybe am, but probably the best way is looking back to the way Michael Beale spoke about, you know, he spoke about youth development, coach development, but he says if you actually take the words youth and coach away, it's about development. And, you know, that's what ticks Stuart's boxes, that's what floats his boat, that's his That's what he wants the Rage to master, is that development. So whether he's developing the player as an under-16 international, or whether he's developing the coach who might be working the grassroots game but aspires to someday work maybe in Club Academy Scotland or even beyond that, or is currently with Club Academy Scotland teams, then it's developing. It's developing the person holistically, whether that be as a coach or whether that be as a young player.
Yeah, it might be an odd way of wording this question, Stuart, but when you are dealing with the coaches and you are working it, can you almost put yourself into it and imagine you're talking to a younger version of yourself, if you like, tell them what you things you might have done or what you could do differently if you were a younger coach?
Probably, and in the back of the mind there is something in that, you know, that this, because as I said, hopefully I'm not the best version of myself, hopefully that guy's still to come in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years time, if I'm still fortunate enough to be working within football and working within coaching. But there's moments when I sort of think, well, why is it that somebody would want to listen to me? But then you maybe trace back and see where these guys are within their journey, and there's something in there that sort of says, well, hopefully I've got something that can shine a light. And it's certainly not all telling about, you know, what to do and how to do it. It's, a lot of the time it's about, you know, sort of, I guess, guiding some of these people towards the questions that they need to ask themselves and how to think about certain things and what maybe to focus on to be able to go and practice and learn from that. So, but there's definitely an element of looking back, if you like, and sort of seeing parts of yourself in there and going, yeah, I was that guy. I behaved maybe a little bit like that. I was maybe a wee bit overconfident in my own capabilities at one point in time, and just trying to try and set these people, as I say, on that pathway or that journey to kind of lifelong learning. That's I know it sounds a wee bit kind of corny and a bit cheesy, but that's what you want. You want people to be that way, and I think if you've got that sort of commitment to yourself, then that will show through to the players that you're working with, and give them the best possible chance.
Because Stuart said these very words himself earlier in the podcast, the ultimate goal for a coach internally, and obviously dealing with other coaches and young players, ultimately is to end up in that men's A squad, for those results to go that way. And I guess we've got the people in place that are doing all that work behind the scenes, that it must make us feel, you know, pretty optimistic for the future.
Absolutely, and that was when you asked about culture earlier on, that's why I think it's so important that there's good working relationships from Stuart into Brian, then into Billy, into Scott, you know, and Malky overseeing that. So that's for me is crucial, and I've been fortunate enough through the kind of collaborative work between football development and coach education to have been inside that room when the guys are talking about players, you know. And it's not about, I don't know if I'm saying too much here, and Stuart will correct me if I am, but, you know, it's not about Billy Stark picking an under-19 squad in isolation. You know, the guys are allowed an opinion in that, and they're allowed to chip in, so that they've maybe seen that player progressively over the past couple of years, or vice versa. Billy's then asking opinion, what he was like 2 years ago, how's he come on. So yeah, I mean, the players are well looked after. The if that is a culture that the head coaches have created for themselves in that room, if you like, to then, you know, and that's just a simple thing, that's just about picking squads, never mind about what they actually do from the moment they meet up to the moment they say cheerio and then everything else in between again, you know, going back to clubs to watch those players as well. So, no, they're in good hands.
And what do you find it like working with other coaches at the relative age groups? And
It's a very enjoyable environment that's there, because, you know, I think we all recognise where we're at, but also where we want to be, and by and large how we want to get there. But it's also challenging, you know. It's productive in the sense that we do question not only what we're doing individually, but you know, as a full performance department, you know, is what we're doing the right way? Is there something that we can do a little bit better? You know, I know Malky does with us, and certainly with the clubs that we are engaged with through the Pride Lab initiative and everything else like that. We're trying to sort of speak an awful lot about this Plan, Do, Check, Act. He mentioned that obviously when he was in, and it comes down to that, you know, from the smallest things that we do to the biggest things that we do, it's trying to apply that sort of model and being reflective in a large way, the same way we would do with coaches through coach education. You ask them to do that, you know, go and plan your session, go and plan your training week, you know, plan out your kind of month and your schedule and your year, check on it periodically to make sure that it's on track, or if it's not on track, you know, how are you acting upon that? and then go away and do it again. So you know, there is that kind of model there. It is a good environment. It's good people that are committed for a start. They're obviously knowledgeable, bring different experiences. And as I say, I've worked very hard to be this lucky. I think Greg touched on that before. But at the same time, I recognise the responsibility, and you know, I'm really proud that I can make a contribution to the department.
I think one of the things worthy of note is we recently had a UEFA auditor over, and he was looking particularly at elite youth, both coach education and player development. So we were fortunate in that we had a kind of couple of days on a UEFA licence, I think, at the time, and then Stuart was going straight into one of his under 16 camps. You know, I'm not blowing smoke up our own backsides here, but he was blown away by, you know, what we did, what we're trying to achieve. And then obviously we took that from coach education into Stuart's camp, and he was just absolutely amazed, observing the training and observing, you know, meal times, everything like that. And he was just, I've still to read the report, right enough, the report might see differently, but no, he was absolutely amazing, very, 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 very complimentary of all the work that was going on, which to me speaks volumes, because there's a gentleman who goes round, you know, he's busy. He goes to see UEFA elite tournaments. He audits them as well for UEFA, and I don't know how many. Maybe covers 10 countries out UEFA. You know, so he sees a lot, and to be that complimentary over that 3 or 4 day period was fantastic.
I guess that must have been another moment where there's a lot of pride there in the work that's going on.
Yeah, I think you know, in part because of the journey that my life has taken, not only in coaching but from a personal perspective as well. You know, born in Scotland, grew up in Australia, came back to Scotland to play, went back to Australia and back here again for the third time. You know, I've always been, you know, I guess exposed to different sort of environments and having different inputs. So when you have somebody like Cairn coming across, I just thought it's just a natural thing to open up the doors and say, yeah, come in, because you would want that reciprocated as well if you went elsewhere, knowing that it's coming from a guy with the right intentions. You know, he's not coming here to try and steal anything or report back to Switzerland under 16 coach should they ever come across playing against us, and if he does, then so be it. But you know, it was great to have somebody like that. And you know, sitting down again, as Greg referred to earlier, you know, having that cup of coffee or sitting down at lunchtime and starting to ask questions of each other, you know, you start to learn little bits and pieces that you know can help you out. But at the same time, if you feel that it can help Cairn out and whatever he's doing, then I think we're only too happy to contribute to something like that.
Because I guess that's a measure and a sign of the work going in the right direction ultimately, which is what your roles are.
Absolutely, and I talk about benchmarking a lot, and that's essentially what Cairn's doing. He's benchmarking against other nations to produce a report. As I say, we've still to read the report, but you know, from you know, all intents and purposes, it will be very positive. So no, but as Stuart said again, if Cairn was the type of individual that should he felt that anything maybe needed improved, touched upon, or even if he was just to ask Stuart and I a question, why are you doing it that way, why are you doing it this way? You know, there was always that learning opportunity, that learning moment whilst he was with us, that we could have picked his brain as well on how to do things. But it was very favourable throughout the 4 days, and it was very, as I say, advantageous. And myself, Stuart, and Stuart's assistant under 16, Stuart Glennie as well, you know, even being able to go out for a meal and just chat around what's happening and the good things. And it sounds as if I'm blowing smoke up our own backsides, but I'm genuinely not. It was all very favourable, it was all very positive about the work that we were doing over that particular period in time.
Well, because I guess a part of this process is knowing when you've done something wrong, but also being able to blow a bit of smoke up your own backside, knowing when you're doing things well. It's ultimately how you're going to drive it forward.
Yeah, it is. You know, you have to recognise when you know, you're putting some good practice out there, and when things are going well. Obviously, you're always trying to strengthen that and make sure that you enhance that, whatever that process might be. But at the same time, without sort of going back and reflecting on it, you might never know, you know, what is actually good practice and how you've arrived at that point in time. And similarly on the other side, you know, if there's things that you believed at the time, you know, that you wanted to apply for the right reasons, and it turns about when you go and reflect on it that it's not had the outcomes it's desired, it had certain challenges that forces you into some adjustment, then you know, so you have to do that as well, and have to be the first to admit it. And there is, it's I think this, you know, the time that you stop doing that, or the time that you think you've cracked it, is the time when you either have to give up, or when the game itself comes back to bite you in the backside. And that's, you know, irrespective of the level that you're working at, whether that's with a 5 and 6 year old's grassroots team, or right the way through to the highest levels of the professional game. You know, it comes down a lot of time to reflecting on things and asking simple questions. You know, I think from my period in Australia and going through the licence courses there as well, one of the real nuggets that came back, and again it sounds a wee bit kind of cheesy and cliched, but I don't mind them every now and again because they're easy to remember. Mm-hmm. But you know, one of the things that stuck with me was, it boils down to what to coach and how to coach it. You know, so if you can look at those things all the time purely from a coaching perspective, then you're doing okay. And I think by and large we have to, you know, keep working, you know, through a lot of the programmes that Greg's doing, from the very first level 1.1 courses right the way through to the pro licence, try and apply that, you know, what to coach, how to coach it, and probably, I guess, more clearly define what is coaching at those levels. You know, coaching with the very young kids, I think you don't really need to know an awful lot about football. You need to really have some good understanding, and certainly be able to apply some key principles and know an awful lot about kids and how they behave, and how to engage with them, and how to make them obviously enjoy their experience for that 45 minutes, an hour at the training, at the games, or whatever you play. So that's what you need to know about as a coach there. When you're working obviously at the highest levels of the professional game, you need to know different things. You need to have a real good insight into the game. But at the same time, I think, as you mentioned it before, you still need to know about people, you know, because that, you know, through my coaching journey is one thing that just becomes more and more prevalent. You know, you need to have that engagement with people. Once you've got that, then okay, we can share about how we're going to improve and how we're going to develop.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the person then, Stuart, the coach. We've talked about, you know, your career, where you've been. We've talked about the things you've learned, the mistakes you've made, the good things you've done, the what you're doing just now. What about the future? What's your hopes and aims for the future, Stuart?
Hopes and aims, as I say, just, you know, again, it sounds a wee bit cheesy, and you get from one of these motivational speakers, I know. Just, you know, to be the best that I can be. If I'm brutally honest and I look back at my kind of playing career, you know, I was never going to be somebody that reached the highest heights, if you like. I wasn't as talented as that. But at the same time, I think I know now, looking back, that there's periods where I could have worked a bit harder. Not within training sessions, within games, but probably overall on my game, and maybe made some different decisions and applied myself a little bit better and eked a little bit more out of my career, maybe played at a slightly higher level or achieved a little bit more. But that's by the by. I think the situation for me is now I'm determined to make sure that doesn't repeat itself when it comes to my coaching. So becoming the best coach that I can be, you know, alongside being the best dad that I can be. I've got two smashing kids. Amazing how quickly they obviously grow up and develop. Fortunate now that the young fella's decided he is falling in love with football as well, so trying to nurture that and grow that. But from a professional perspective, you know, very, very fortunate, as I say, but I have worked hard to be this fortunate, to be in the position that I am, and I really enjoy what I'm doing. I take on board the responsibility that's there to try and help shape in some way, shape or form, or make a contribution to shaping the future of the game here in Scotland, not only from, you know, the players within the national team and preparing them for all that requires, but also trying to make a contribution in other areas, you know. So with Greg, with the coach education courses, with our Pride Lab initiatives, and trying to work as hard as I possibly can with the head of children's programmes to make sure that they can be the best within their roles, and that we've got the best children's programmes in Europe and across the world. So doing whatever I can to do that. And at some point later on in life, when I'm putting the feet up in the 19th hole of the golf course, I can hopefully reflect back on having made that contribution to the game and saying, yeah, I didn't let time go by me. I've made the most of whatever period I had as a coach.
Yeah, because ultimately these guys will be developing the players and obviously nurturing them through. Our coaches themselves are on an exciting path when you look at some of the internal coaches we've got and where their careers could be heading from here as well, Greg.
You're talking about the underage international coaches again? No, absolutely, and a lot of them are going from strength to strength. You look at, you know, Billy Stark's an interesting one for me. Billy's been with the association as under 21 manager, then goes away. Was he, I can't remember exactly, you know, Queen's Park and East Kilbride, and then comes back in as under 19, you know. So you don't know how it's going to end up, but you know, they are on a trajectory there, I suppose. You know, Brian is doing some great work. Scott Gemmell, you know, is getting spoken about in different areas and things like that as well, rumoured with different things, you know. So it's just, you just don't know where, you know. Shelley Kerr is very, very well thought of, and everything she's doing with the women's, the senior women's national team. So yeah, there's a lot of, as I keep saying it, but there's a lot of good people there doing a lot of good things, and as Stuart's alluded to there, taking things in the right direction to perhaps leave a legacy, leave the country in a better footing for, I suppose, future success.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.